Welcome to The Running Public with Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint. It's Tuesday, folks, and you know what that means. Training Tuesday.
We are going to take every rabbit hole, follow tangents, use useless metaphors, get lost in the weeds. This is Training Tuesday.
When you're ready to take your training or racing to the next level, go to therunningpublic.com. We have both monthly subscription training plans, $19.99 a month, and Bracken and I both offer one-on-one customized coaching. Again, go to therunningpublic.com and check out our offerings.
It says app is not focused. I had it split screen.
Oh, well, we started recording, so this is a bad start.
It's better now. We almost had a confused app, but now it's centered. Notification went away. It's happy.
Beautiful.
Well, I want to start today, Kirk, by bragging.
Do it.
You accept? Is that acceptable? You good with that?
I think you should brag more. So please, the floor is yours.
Okay. We don't talk a ton about the athletes we work with. It's like how I don't post about my kids very often on social media. It's not really my place to decide whether they want that or not. But today I'm deciding it's going to happen whether he wants it or not, because he deserves a little bit of love. So I'm going to give him a little bit of anonymity. I'm only going to use his first word. His first name.
Okay.
But I've been working with an athlete named Corey for several years now.
Okay.
And he's one of those people, and I'm just going to say it out loud, a thing that a coach probably shouldn't say out loud when others of his athletes listen that this may not apply to, but Corey's one of those individuals who I would be friends with in real life. Like, if Corey lived near me, we'd probably go for our runs together. And
so is that implying that some of your other athletes you wouldn't be friends with in real life? Is that, that's what I'm hearing, which is hurtful.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, continue.
And they probably would feel the exact same. Some of us are like 30 years apart in age. We're just probably not as compatible. Some of us that are 20 or 30 years apart are super compatible. And we probably would be at each other's house for dinner if we were closer. But some just, we're not necessarily compatible as friends, but training style works well with each other. Some, you know how it is. Some of your athletes you actually don't communicate that often with. You write them their plan. They disappear into the woods. They come back a monster later and ask for the next plan.
Those are the athletes I tell them that they make my job too easy, because they do. And if you're one of Bracken's athletes listening to this right now, now you're going to say to yourself, like, what camp am I in? Am I in the I'd be friends with Bracken in real life
I'll
camp?
Never tell.
Or am I not? You should ask him. The next time you chat with Bracken, athlete, ask him what camp you're in. Do it. Put him on the spot.
Editing this out.
No, keep it in. All right, let's not derail or detract from your story.
Anyways, I really like Corey, and he is one of the most low-maintenance athletes that I work with. Now, we do our Zoom calls as needed, but it's generally just like start of a new training plan. So we go over the race that he just had, drum up a new plan, and then he follows it right up until it's about time to race, and we get on another call. Sometimes halfway through the plan, we'll check in again. But we message on Slack from time to time, but he's not one of the high flyers in terms of messages, and he's not one of the high flyers in terms of video calls. But every time we have a call, it's just, it's a good, pleasant chat. I like the guy a lot. He's the one last spring, he and I met up at a race, and we did a trail race in the snow together. Mm. He's in Illinois, so from time to time, we see each other at races. Anyways, all that to say, he's someone I enjoy working with, and he just kind of gets the work done, kind of has that self-deprecating humor where he doesn't take himself too seriously, but deep down he really cares.
Yep.
So we've been working together for a while, and he started out as purely an OCR athlete. And then over time, he started dabbling in other things. And now this year, he's decided his goal was a half marathon, and he wanted to do some duathlons and a triathlon. So fall, winter, base building, a lot of what we would say sweet spot work, so sub-threshold work, because he's doing a lot of spin bike work, a lot of stuff on the trainer, and then treadmill work of just like half marathon and marathon pace work. Nothing sexy, but he's just clicking it off week after week after week. And he went and ran a half marathon this past weekend. So spring half marathon, very common. This is the dividing line between his seasons. immediately after this, he pivots to doing multi-sport work. But he was going off this on just strength running, really. We didn't do much spice at all, just the stuff we preach on here, but even like one more notch watered down in terms of speed because he was balancing bike work as well. So strength-based training, if that makes sense.
Yep. And what happened?
So he wrote down 147.59. That would make him happy. I think that'd be a lifetime PR. And that's kind of based off an 8-miler he ran last year, what he thought he could do. And he said 145 flat, though, in the 145s would be his like A day. Like, could be possible. Guy goes out and runs 142.
Woo!
And I just couldn't be happier for Corey because he's put in the silent, in the dark, unsexy work on the trainer, on the treadmill, getting outside from time to time, but he's just running half marathon and marathon pace and sub marathon pace, doing some sweet spot work on the bike and just showing up every day, not making a big deal about it. And he went out and got like a 7-minute PR or something like that in the half marathon. Now he's running low sevens now for 13 straight miles. And when we met, that was his 5K pace.
Yeah.
And to take your 5K pace, improve it by 10 seconds and then stretch it out over 10 extra miles is kind of like a historic effort. That speaks to the work he's put in over the years. So Corey, take your flowers, enjoy them. I know you're not totally comfortable with me talking about you, but just take it.
Way to go, Corey. That's fantastic. That's just what you do in the dark, so to speak, non-flashy, consistent work. Like, I got to go for my 8-mile recovery run again today. Like, there is nothing flashy about that on a Monday. How is this helping me? Mm-hmm. All those things, those deposits are still being made. Your app is not focused again, Bracken. It's telling me that.
I know. I was just switching over.
Yeah.
Just to see his training plan for 1 second. Did it pop up on your page too?
No, but it's telling me that you're tooling around. I can see that. We'll have to do...
So I just want to say this. 9 straight weeks. He did double threshold on Tuesday, but it was bike and run.
Mm-hmm.
And then a split tempo on Saturday. 2 quality per week for 9 weeks. 2 more quality per week with a half marathon lean towards it for 6 weeks on top of that. 15 weeks of 2 quality per week, 3 lifts, and he went out and did it. Now, that doesn't speak to all the work he did prior to that, but he wasn't running 3 quality a week. He was just drilling every workout for 15 straight weeks.
Yeah. I mean, that adds up. That adds up. You put a penny in the bank every day and suddenly there's no more room for pennies. You're full. You've done it. You charged it up, so to speak. That's great.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll have to do a better job of these athlete highlights. I had, 3 marathons run this weekend, 2 halves, bunch of OCR stuff, some pretty big breakthroughs as well. But maybe we'll kick up. Maybe next time I'll kick off with somebody. Just so we don't belabor our very important topic today that you are so passionate about.
Correct.
And you're chomping at the bit to talk about this topic. It's just radiating from you. So I'll introduce it. And speaking of half marathons, by the way, I got an athlete who may be gifting me her grandma's half marathon entry that is filled up long time ago, 8,000 runners full. It's been chock full. I think that thing fills up in a day or two or something. But anyways, I might be running a half myself coming up in 7 weeks or so. So I'll let you know if I set a 7-minute PR. Not likely.
Do you have a half marathon PR?
No. So I guess I will set a 7-minute PR. I've never raced a half anyways on the roads. So, all right, the point, the topic, the big exciting thing that all of you just can't wait to do in your weekly training routine, drum roll,
mobility. It doesn't even work anymore. These drum rolls don't work on mics like ours.
Not on these mics. Mobility work, folks. We're talking about mobility. We haven't talked about it in 4-plus years since we've started this podcast. We've never even dedicated 30 straight minutes to it, which is kind of embarrassing. Thinking back, but here we are, alas, mobility.
You couldn't talk to two people who are more passionate about the topic. You can't stop Kirk and I from stretching. Not even if you try.
You can't see my legs right now, but I am in a I'm a butterfly stretching right now. Below where the camera is, you can't see that. Yeah, one of my quads, I'm bending back. All right. Now, in all seriousness, now I think we are the people that you should listen to in regards to this. If you're an everyday average Joe or Jane. Because it's not a passion of ours. Mm-hmm. I will say right off the top that I think most mobility work is overrated and stupid and a waste of time. I really enjoy, we had him on the podcast not too long ago, Alec Blennis, and he's a great follow mm-hmm. on social media. But one of his points that he comes back to consistently is, why on earth do you do 20 minutes of mobility before you then get to the squat rack? Like, you're not doing yourself any favors other than wasting your time, in a sense. He says, get to the squat rack, start squatting lighter weights, go through the correct range of motion. Your body will come around because you're doing the movement that you are training to do, and it will be all good in the world. Mm-hmm. And I believe that philosophy in regards to running as well in some capacity. Alec yes. demonstrates it in the strength realm. I think there's some carryover into the running realm. And I'm going to stop talking now, and I'm going to let you give them – I just hinted at mine, but give your overall philosophy on mobility for runners and endurance athletes. I'll give mine to follow up, but where's your head at with all this?
Where my head resides, Kirk, is mm-hmm. that outside of our ankles, no part of our body goes through anything close to resembling a full range of motion while running. The closest it gets – is while sprinting or running downhill. There's just not much that happens mobility-wise, range of motion-wise, while running outside of your ankle that requires you to be this highly accomplished yogi. So while I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with becoming more mobile, I don't think that from a performance standpoint, there's a lot to be gained outside of ankles and to some extent your hips. Ankles and hips are the two highest pieces of priority for runners, in my opinion, for mobility. Now, this is not talking about people with pre-existing injuries or deficiencies, just from a mechanical standpoint of running. Hips and ankles are really all that moves the needle mobility-wise. Now, I'm sure there are people who this is their passion out there, just tearing their hair out and grinding their teeth. But where I want to start from is that you don't need exceptional range of motion to be a good runner. You don't, nor to be a healthy runner. There's going to be a part two to that, a caveat to all of mm-hmm. this. But for right now, all I care about are hips and ankles.
We're gonna get some tough reactions to this episode probably from those who have seen mm-hmm. their life and running change through a mobility program or a stretching routine. Yep. Those who have their career in it, I understand that. I do think there's a time, place, and person in which your time is better spent doing mobility work than, let's say, running. And I think there's a time, place, and person where if you're splitting hairs and you're working with a half an hour that day, does 10 minutes of it go to mobility and 20 to running? Or do we believe that getting all 30 minutes of running in will move the needle further than getting your stretching in, so to speak, right? There's always that song and dance mm-hmm. going right. on, right? And you're right. I think the biggest thing, so when we say mobility, we're talking stretching too. I assume you want to encompass that in this conversation, right?
We might as well, even though the purists, again, are going to cringe. Let's talk about both muscular flexibility and joint flexibility.
So I think
range of motion of everything.
Sure. So I think you made the most important point that I think some people probably don't think about very much is that we don't go through very much range of motion of any one particular joint in the running motion. You do a walking mm-hmm. lunge or a deep squat, and you are going so far past the range of motion on most joints other than your ankles. On a walking lunge, you could argue that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So it's a limited range of motion activity that is repeated thousands and thousands of times over, right? So mm-hmm. on one side of the coin, you could look at an example and say, okay, well, if I can squat well and I can hit parallel, let's say, or I can Bulgarian split squat and go through a full range of motion, Like, is my mobility fine or not? Then it's clearly capable and totally fine to go through its full range of motion. So do I need to focus on mobility or not? And that is my sticking point with the mobility work, is it comes down to the fact of the run range of motion being less than other things that I do. And the other things that I mm-hmm. do feed the range of motion that I need for running. That would be big picture. You understand what I'm saying there? You're smiling.
Yeah, because I think that you're dead on. My take is that most runners stretch more than they need to and lift less than they need to.
Oh, preach, dude.
The weight room work takes you...
Thank you. Preach.
The weight room work takes you through a greater range of motion than you'll need as a runner, and you do it while weighted, which has this amplifying effect. Because it also does something that I want to touch on later, and that is engaging your muscles at both ranges, fully lengthened and shortened. Those are the places you get hurt, lengthened and shortened under exertion. Strength training really handles a lot of that. So if a runner simply takes a lot of the time they spend stretching and lifts, they're going to have the mobility needed like 90% of the time for running. And they're going to be healthier and more able to perform those ranges of motion with some muscle tension and recruitment during it. And so I think you're right on that. The things you do outside of running, for you, it's off in the weight room, makes you perfectly fine with your mobility for running, outside of a little bit of hip stuff and a little bit of ankle stuff.
I want to go like three routes with this now. I don't know if we want to
start it up.
Well, it's like putting the cart in front of the horse. Like typically when we break down these topics, we do like, let's start from the foundation of like, what is considered mobility work? And then let's work mm-hmm. our way to the tippy point, getting lost in the weeds of it. But I think we should just hone in on one specific aspect of mobility work and then just jump to the next instead of making this nice laid out plan.
Let's do it.
Okay. So off the rip, like I do believe mobility work is beneficial for a lot of people. And I will say now that I'm 40, there's some things that I notice a difference in. Most of the mobility work I see benefits me happens before, let's say, a quality session in which output is required. Making sure they work immediately before, not necessarily spending an hour three times a week going through my yoga or Pilates routine or the Badenka method, working the joints as Ryan Kempson would do, so to speak, but rather pre-workout, these muscles seem to do well with range of motion work, opening my gait up and allowing me to run efficiently. So there is a place for it. I will say off the cuff, and I don't know about you if you want to divulge this or not, I haven't static stretched in 5 years. I haven't like sat there and touched my toes in five okay. years. I haven't grabbed my foot, pulled my leg back, and stretched my quad in 5 years. I haven't done any particular static stretching. And I'm not nearly the fastest person in the world, but knock on wood, I don't know if you heard that, I have been more injury-free than ever in these last few years. I'm not saying it's because it's not. But what I am saying is I don't know if the return on investment is necessarily there. What I do is a lot more dynamic work before efforts that matter, rather than in college, mm-hmm. what did we do? We got done with our work. We went into the athletic building and we sat and stretched for 20 minutes bullshitting with our teammates. And that was our routine, right? I'm never more hurt than ever.
We did not.
Really, we did. So that... Yeah. Anything I say is coming from this perspective. I do my strength work twice a week. I squat deep AF. When I do Bulgarian split squats, my knees touch the ground, sometimes on a 24-inch box, right? Or close to it. Like I am working range of motion, and I believe that has allowed me to stay healthy-ish well training in my adult life. Mm-hmm. So anything I say after this, you can just know that is the context in which I'm looking at this from. So I want to turn it to you. I'm trying to set us up here so people understand where we're coming from. How about you, Bracken? Tell us, what have you been doing in that regard?
I strength train. And I know runners really don't like hearing that. Oh, I strength train and it fixes. But it does. Like you said, when I front squat, I squat my butt down to my calves. If I do wall balls, I'm going deep and bouncing off the bottom. That is way more range of motion than my knees or hamstrings or in terms of hip hinge that I'm ever going to need. Deadlifting, that's more than I'll ever need. What it doesn't do is open up my stride forward, and it doesn't work on my toe off and extending my leg drive cycling through. But in terms of just the major movers, I find that lifting progresses my flexibility faster than anything else does with much less risk, because the weight component of lifting is a self-limiter usually.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for runners, you put the weight on your back and you don't feel comfortable and you don't strive for things. You just try to safely complete what you're doing. Where with stretching, you can easily go right past the point that you should be at, and there you go. So I don't do static stretching either. I do two stretches, Kirk.
Okay.
And they're both versions of pigeon pose. I have to work on the outside of my hip and my lower back, that SI area. And I will talk about why next. But those are the only two times I'm ever sitting down or standing still and just holding something is when I'm pushing and putting force against my hips and lower back and just stretching that area. That is my spot. If I stay on top of that, I don't have those sort of back and hip problems that would hold me back from training. When I don't stay on top of that, I lose a few days to a week of training because something flares up. So that's the only thing I do. But yeah, I'm big on dynamic exercises, doing my drills, my skips, my bounding, my leg swings, range of motion with dynamic movement involved, so that by the time I start my quality workout, I'm not going to exceed what I did in my warm-up. So my warm-ups and my lifts comprise 95 to 99% of what I do for mobility and stretching, and the different variations of pigeon pose take care of all the rest.
So we're pretty much the same there, other than maybe you spend some time with like pigeon pose, hip stretching, figure four type work.
Yep.
That's what I'm understanding, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Not even figure four even.
Okay.
But yeah.
But I think people know what that is.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't stretch my hamstrings whatsoever.
So it's kind of like, I've said this before. What I want to jump into, I guess I'll just cut right to it, is the conversation you had about, tension on the muscle while at a certain range of motion being very effective, forcing your body to fire well in a compromised, let's call position. It could be a back squat. Mm-hmm. You squat down, you know, tendons, ligaments, muscles are technically stretched slightly, and then they contract back up, creating force, so you come out of the squat into a standing position. Contracting, have you ever been to some people who do body work or massage or anything like that? Have you ever had somebody stretch you out professionally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do they access a deeper level of stretch? A very typical technique. I use this with my clients. Yes, I stretch clients from time to time, even though I'm telling you I don't know if it's worth your time, because there's value for certain people.
Resist me and then relax.
Thank you. So what a lot of specialists will do, not all, will have you create force and then relax, and then they'll try to sink in a little more range of motion. They'll have you resist, contract your muscle, push into it, relax, and they'll get you a little further the next time and a little further. But it's only through that contraction that a lot of times things open up. We're working on a contraction in a range of motion. That very principle is why Bracken and I believe that strength work, although it's not accomplishing manual, let's call it stretching like that, is a poor man's, simple man's version of that. Because those things are happening while you're going through your strength routines. So this is an episode about do your strength work and not do your mobility work. It's definitely not. But at the same time, some people may believe that's like a cheater answer. Be like, oh, come on. Like, really? Like, you're calling strength training stretching? 1,000%. That's exactly what I'm saying. And Bracken is saying. Because we're using our muscles in different joint positions with different flex points and angles and all of that. And that is running you through the range of motion. So I wanted to talk about that point because you said that right away in the beginning, and I didn't know if we wanted to elaborate on that or not. But do you have anything more to add to that, or that piece of the mobility puzzle?
Well, then what that I think accomplishes is it helps prevent when people, quote unquote, pull a muscle. When you blast into a sprint and your muscle extends and contracts, and you're at wide and short range of motion, putting full exertion through all of it, it finds the weak spot.
Sure.
It's like there is a dried out spot of the rubber band, and somewhere along there, it's going to be exposed. Well, you're tensing and contracting all the way through a squat or a hamstring curl or things like that. If you go through that, you get rid of those tight spots, dried out spots of the rubber band. When you slip on a trail and suddenly your face is 4 inches off the ground and you have to just crank down on your hamstrings, plant your feet into the ground to keep yourself upright, that's when people have that real high up under their butt twinge, or right in the middle of their hamstring twinge, because it's in a position they're not used to and suddenly it's full force exerted. Running does not take you through that. Stretching does not take you through that. Stretching could prevent you from tearing anything as you extend way out, but it's not going to protect you when you have to engage when you're at either end of the flexion or extension spectrum. But strength training does do that. And so strength training makes it so that when the weird sport-specific, non-specific movements happen, when you're out of line or you have to snap into a motion, you're protected, because you're used to exerting and clenching and recruiting muscles at every range of motion. So that's why I think from a muscular standpoint, it's important to, in the term, Alec wouldn't like this term, but to bulletproof that area the best you can. It's Kevlar. It's not bulletproof. It's going to stop most of it. Something's going to get through. But how many times have you just stubbed your toe on a trail and just had that jarring catch of yourself and thought, oh, that could have been bad on my hamstrings? Probably like once a month, especially in winter. But strength training helps that.
You clean that up nicely. I think telling people what they should do outside of strength work, because we've spent time, and maybe we'll rededicate another episode to strength training for runners. We haven't done one in a while. I've been getting a number of messages about revisiting old topics. They're like, you haven't talked about training for the aging athlete. I was like, we did, but man, it might have been 2 years, right? We have new listeners, so we probably need to go back and do some of these things. But if you're in an ideal world, okay, first of all, let's do this. Answer me a question, and then we can either dive into it deeper or not. Is there a place for static stretching for a runner?
I'm sure there is, but I don't have one. That's kind of my answer for all of this. Doing more mobility work, more stretching, as long as you don't hurt yourself doing it, it's not going to hurt you or make you worse. But it's not the great liberator that many people believe it to be. Like, if I don't get my 40 minutes of mobility work in the morning, I'm just not useful as an athlete. Then we have bigger problems to deal with. So no, yes, no, and yes. I'm sure there's a place for it, but I don't prescribe it. You have to have a specific reason to be static stretching.
Do you think dynamic stretching, we will call it, if those are not conflicting words, dynamic stretching, that's not a thing, and that's probably very incorrect to say those together, but so people get the idea. Is dynamic stretching beneficial for most or all athletes?
Yeah, and I'm going to say it's compulsory. It's mandatory if you have aspirations of performance.
And then I'm going to pull one more, two more. We've already covered this. This is all in regards to mobility. Is strength training mandatory for distance runners?
No.
Okay.
But whatever word is right underneath it is what it is.
And are plyometrics, which you could sort of potentially loop, I lump this into this sort of area, are those beneficial / necessary for a distance runner, endurance athlete?
Beneficial, yes. Mandatory, just like strength training, I'm going to say no, but whatever is right under mandatory, that is what plyo and strength work is for a runner.
Okay, so we have static stretching, strength training, mobility type stretching, which again, don't get on me for that, guys, and then plyos. Rank them in
and
order.
Dynamic.
Or dynamic, right. Rank them, we had four things. Rank them in order of least to most important, in your opinion.
Ooh, least important, static stretching.
Okay.
There's never been any study, to my knowledge, that has proven that static stretching can improve you as a runner. In fact, there's some studies that have shown it can reduce your top-end speed and your dynamicism as an athlete. So then I am going to say, Kirk,
I know what you're going to say.
If
I know what you're going to say.
We're going to take. Do you think so?
I think you're going to say strength training next, even though we just spent a bunch of time talking about it.
I'm going to say if you take injury out of it and only look at performance, purely performance for a runner, I'm going to say drills and plyo can combine all of that into one. That I would rather have someone take their legs through, it's like overspeed and underspeed training, overspeed work, but for mobility, run doing your A skips, B skips, C skips, high knees, butt kicks, bounding, plyo. If you do all of that religiously, I think that you will have every ounce out of your stride that you'll ever need. Where if you just strength train, you'll have all the resistance to impact and, I don't know, bulletproofing of the muscles, but it's not sports specific. And so just purely in a vacuum, if we don't have to worry about getting hurt and we're just thinking performance for a distance runner, I think plyo and drills are going to give you more bang for your buck from a stride standpoint, but that strength training will give you the best mobility and health. How's that for convoluted?
I don't even know what ranked where. So you have to tell me. Of the four.
All that to be said, strength train first. Yeah.
Strength train's your number
one. Strength training is the top.
Yep.
Yeah, because most of us aren't running fast enough to be inherently limited by all the drills and plyo work. And since I bake that into my warm-up before quality days anyway, maybe they're just equal partners. I don't think you should be doing speed work. I don't think you should touch anywhere near race pace without doing your dynamic drills and your a little bit of plyo. And I don't think you should try running volume without strength training. So maybe they're just 1A and 1B. Static is down below. I don't care about it.
Well, you got to look. We had this example or conversation on our Friday Q&A about cadence. We said, well, look at what the pros do, right? How often do the pros bring up, well, I got my cadence cleaned up and then suddenly I'm a world champion. Like, we've never heard anybody say that ever, right? So you look to the pros and you see, well, what do the pros do on like a daily basis? And you see what they prioritize on a daily basis. You want to talk about drills. Watch a Jakob Ingebrigtsen warm up and cool down video. Any of the OAC guys, anytime we get a behind the scenes look, especially at post-collegiately, when people are in professional training camps and developing their own philosophies, it's daily. A guy like Jakob gets done with his recovery run in the morning and maybe hit some strides and dynamics and range of motion stuff. I don't know if I've ever seen any documentation of, let's say, a guy like him, like standing up and like doing a hamstring stretch, for example. Those guys stay, could you imagine? Right. So a lot of these men and women are very, very regimented with range of motion, dynamic movements, whether it's something as simple, they have plenty of things. I don't even know what they do and understand what their prescription is, but something as simple as high knees or some sort of front toe touch or leg swings on the fence or things of that nature, just, you know, on steroids, so to speak, with the frequency, with the intensity. So they hit their dynamics and they probably are touching that on a daily basis, would you say? If not 2 out of 3 days, probably.
Yeah. Daily.
Daily. And then they are in a purposely built and customized strength routine. Now their strength routine may look different than what Bracken and I talk about let's put a bunch of weight on your back and hit it. They could be doing a lot of single leg box step up work, very high volume with lightweight, for example, or they could be doing very specific smaller muscle group type movements to stabilize and strengthen the hips, for example, which you see a lot of those guys do, the rear chain stuff, Pilates ball type work, things that aren't very flashy, the piddly shit, as we called it on previous episodes. But they're doing lots, especially hip, in my opinion, from what I see. A lot of hip work, a lot of core work. And they're doing it regularly. Again, I don't see much, and there's people out there that I'm sure are the exception to this rule, but what you don't see is a lot of the sit around and stretch stuff going on before after sessions, rarely. You see a purposeful strength program. You see a lot of dynamics, plyometric type work. And I think if anything else happens, it does great, but I don't believe, I'm not aware of a group that heavily focuses on that. What do you see?
Yeah, same exact thing. And it goes back all the way to college. I mean, every workout, the whole team's on the track. and you're going up and down, back and forth on the track or the infield, doing all of your drills and range of motion. And even when you are pulling your ankle back to your butt, it's while walking, pausing, clench, hold, walk. It's mm-hmm. it's not sit down and let's just lean into stretches. It's everything is purposeful. And it does so much to clean up your stride as well. The huge part of running fast is being balanced. The faster your feet can hit a place where they can put power into the ground, the faster you get off the ground. And it's ankles and it's hips. And that's what you see people constantly at the high end working on. I do, though, have a moment where stretching matters. And that is to address the repercussions of the work we are doing.
Okay.
One downside of the human body is that when you really work an area, it just wants to huddle up and tighten up mm-hmm. and protect itself. And that is the type of thing that must be worked out so that you don't have compensatory injuries. So an area of the body I would say that that happens to a lot would be hips or calves, where after a big workout, they're just really tight. And people all the time end up having Achilles or plantar fascia problems because calves get really tight and you have to work mm-hmm. that area out. And so part of it is manual stimulation. Get in there, manipulate it with a Theragun or a massager or your hands or a roller or whatever. But sometimes there is a time for just stretching out your calves. For just taking them to a point, an angle of exertion and holding and tensing and then sinking into it more. Like there is a time for that. But it's after the fact to work on damage that's been done. Same thing for hips. Sometimes after a big workout, you get up off the couch later and your hips are just tight. And you just got to get down on the ground, find a way to lean into it and just work on your lower hips, your hips and your lower back. There's a time for that. But it's not for a performance advantage. It is for a recovering from the last thing I did and getting my body back to homeostasis so that I can do it again. And most of that can be done with mobility or with a percussion instrument or with something that does not require you to just sit and stretch for minutes on end.
Yeah, I think there gets a little bit of confusion between like, most people, when you think of stretching or mobility, you think of muscle. Like, I'm going to stretch my hamstring. I'm going to stretch my quad. I'm going to stretch my hip flexor, my glute, my piriformis, yada, yada. The list goes on and on. But really, it comes down to, I believe, joint flexibility more than anything, right? The insertion points mm-hmm. into the joint, which is where, like, we'll call it tendons insert into joints, which is like, the muscles all bundle together into this really hard, tenuous fiber that then is molded into your joint, right? Like your quad is your quad, you form muscles, so I called your quad, but they all, you know, some of those muscles are real big and meaty in the middle, and then they attach at these small insertion points, let's say the size of your thumb. It's all comes down to the attachments, right? And so if you have mobility with your joints, if your joints can go through full range of motion without a lot of pushback, you're halfway there already, right? Like, okay, the tendons and ligaments themselves aren't compromised, right? I mean, you want to, you know, be rendered useless. Like, what is your Achilles tendon? Well, it's the attachment of one of your calf muscles down the backside of your, right? That's going to render you useless. So the joint insertion points are very important. That's where I think a lot of, like, the theory of, and we could have Ryan Kempson on again to talk about it. Sometimes like the knees over toes guys, but like the joint mobility, I believe that there's things to do for that I buy into very much so. The muscle thing, yes. Right? And stretching muscles and relieving tension there can have a chain reaction effect, right? And maybe alleviate a little tension on the joints. But they're really hard to access. Like you can't like stretch out like your tendon very well, right? There's not much elasticity there to allow mm-hmm. movement there. So I'm getting to a point. Don't worry. And that is much like the rubber band theory you said, where like you have a dry part of the rubber band and that's where it breaks. Well, our muscles very much relax and contract very like a rubber band, and an overstretched and flaccid rubber band can't generate as much power and force once it's used too much. It's stretched like heck. It's not as powerful, right? That would be the correct word for it. It doesn't generate as much force. And so I'm talking way on the other side of this argument, but like overstretching, and you initiated mostly for power athletes, which I agree with you, but like overstretching, just playing with that rubber band so much can actually lose or ungenerate, if that's a word, degenerate your power ability to some extent. If it's really, really, you know, like super loose, so to speak, like we need that tension. We need our muscles to want to be tight when it's appropriate because that generates force and propulsion. So there's sort of two mm-hmm. different things you have to look at. The joint, the insertion points, like does my knee bend and flex in range of motion just standing here? Like, can I extend my leg all the way? Can I tuck my heel back to my butt? Like, does the joint move well? If the answer is yes, you're 90% of the way there in my mind. And then the rest comes down to really when we are tight, it comes down to damage from previous workouts. It could be I'm sore from squatting. Like, no matter mm-hmm. what you do, like you said, our muscles want to ball up. Like, stretching might be a really good thing to try to open that up temporarily for you if you're like having a hard time getting up the stairs. But when we're talking about like long-term mm-hmm. range of motion biomechanics for running, I think the argument still comes through joint and tendon range of motion work. And I know we're kind of coming back full circle mm-hmm. to like the strength piece and the other stuff, but that's what I believe it comes down to. Like, I don't think you should just stretch the heck out of your rubber bands because they're not going to contract as well. Mm-mm. So that's why the dynamics that work the distal ends of things, I believe, while the muscles are firing and contracting, make the most sense. And maybe I broke that down too long-windedly unnecessarily, or maybe that put some things together for people, but that's sort of the why to, especially static stretching, that I'm not sure the juice is worth the squeeze, we will call it. Maybe even counterproductive.
Yeah. And some people are going to be able to stretch to the point where they're overstretched. Most people are going to hurt themselves static stretching to get to that point first. And the micro tears and the muscle damage you do while stretching is not the same as the micro tears and muscle damage you do while activating, while putting it under a load. They do not repair the same way, and they do not help you in the same manner. So one, you come back tighter, one, you come back stronger. You don't want to come back in a compromised fashion. You always want to come back stronger. So I think if we had to summate all of this, it would be that if you have to take your muscles through range of motion or through stretching or through anything that's designed to loosen them or joints or ligaments, do so under load or while moving. If you can be moving safely while doing it, it's better for you as an athlete. If you have to do it while standing still, you should have a very specific reason why you're doing that action, because there's a chance that's the one that you either don't need or that's going to set you back the furthest. And if you can't do it while moving, then you're not ready for it. Then you shouldn't be doing it. That's the way I look at all of these types of things.
I had a point I was going to follow that up with. I got lost gazing into your eyes.
What color are they this morning, Kirk?
We're
a little cloudy over
like
here.
Like a stone blue. It's a little green.
A stone blue.
If that's a thing. Oh, it just left me. That never, it rarely happens here.
Do it while moving.
Well, yeah, do it while moving. No, it was something there. I hope you can save me right now. It's going to come to me as soon as you start talking about something. I know it will.
So I've come to a conclusion, Kirk, and that is that I do not like the Speed Goat 5. I do not like them.
You 180'd. That's a distracting topic of conversation right there.
Trying to pull something out of you.
Oh, I remember.
I may be done with Speed Goats.
I remember. Okay, no, I do remember now. That did not help jog my memory.
mm-hmm.
But as soon as I'm done saying this, I want to ask you about that because that I'm confused. I just recommended that shoe to two people this weekend who asked, like, where's... So now I hope I don't have any guilt over that. But I just wanted to say, because there's probably like a dozen people listening right now that want to like burn the running public house down. They're listening to us. They're fuming. Their whole career may revolve around... And we could be... I'm not an expert. I'm certainly not an expert. And clearly, based on my opinions, I'm not a stretch expert. So it's just like we need to get that out there. In fact, I would very much, please reach out to us. I would love a rebuttal to this on a Friday episode with somebody who knows more than we do, or a confirmatory. I would love to chat this out with somebody who is an expert, and they can tell us why we're right, wrong, if we should just stop this whole thing now or continue the good fight, right? So reach out. But what I'm getting at is this. I do believe you said under certain circumstances, when you talk about static stretching, if you're at a point when you're dealing with chronic injury and there are mm-hmm. imbalances or there's true damage for some reason or another, without question, we are talking mostly from a performance and health standpoint, like what's going to keep me healthy and what's truly yes. going to make me a better runner, right? Maybe some of these static stretches for you specifically may keep you healthy. I don't know what your tendencies are on the injury front as a runner, but I'm not discrediting static stretching as a way to feel good. We're not discrediting it as a therapeutic mind-body exercise. I'm not discrediting it for other things like fixing acute issues or imbalances or things that are causing you to be injured. We probably should have said this all up front, but there's a lot of benefits to static stretching for other reasons. Just like we did our How to Run Your Best series. Like, we look at this from a performance standpoint. We look at this from a best bang for your buck standpoint. You listening as if we're talking to a group of athletes sitting here wanting to be their best. And in our opinions, that's what we're talking about here. Like, is static stretching going to make you better? In our opinion, no. Unless you have a specific issue that needs to be addressed by your PT or your doctor or something right. else. So I think before our house is burnt down by that handful of people, and you could still disagree even from that point of view, I think it's just important that that is said about the things we've said, like knowing that's the place this all comes from. Like, if you feel good stretching, like, please, yeah. like, if you enjoy life better and feel like that is good for you for reasons, like, yes, but performance-wise is what we're getting at more than anything. And that's the lens we look yeah. at everything through.
This is no different than when we talk about fueling for workouts. Are those the dietary guidelines? Have a lot of sugar, a lot of carbs. Are those the dietary right. guidelines that will make you the healthiest human ever? No. But are they going to give you the best performance on a daily basis running? Yeah.
Right.
And running keeps you healthy. And running with a higher sugar or carb diet is going to probably make you a healthier individual than a sedentary lifestyle who follows like the Mediterranean diet or something like that. You know, something that's supposed to bring up all this longevity and higher planes of existence. Same thing with this. Could you potentially be a more mobile, fluid human being by doing a lot of yoga and more in tune with yourself? Yeah. Yeah, you probably can, but it's not going to change you as a runner unless, like you said, you have an acute issue you need to fix. So simply doing dynamic workouts and drills and exercises and lifting on a near daily basis will keep you fully mobile and as close to injury free as you can get, certainly in terms of range of motion issues.
I don't know how I forgot that point in the moment. It's like my brain went blank. Like, I wanted to make that entire point and I couldn't remember that was what I wanted to talk about. That's embarrassing.
You're 40, so, Kirk.
I'm 41 in 2 weeks. Okay. Ooh. I know. All right. So I feel like we're bagging on this whole topic a little bit. I do feel a little bad. Okay. And we're doing this like...
I'm going to bag on it some more. You ready?
Sure.
This is an industry that capitalizes on the inability to prove anything. Okay? A little bit of a rant here. The quickest way to ensure that someone has to keep paying you money is to address an issue that they can't acutely diagnose. Oh, you're not engaging your glutes. Oh, you have a huge amount of tension in your pelvis. You are extremely tight through here and we need to work on that. This isn't firing. That's not stretching. This isn't moving the way it should. You can't prove that with an MRI, an X-ray. And so you have a lot of personal trainers or PTs or chiropractors that will work on areas that you can't define. That doesn't mean it's fake, but it means that you don't know. It's like taking your car to a mechanic when you know nothing about cars. Your mechanic might be awesome, or they might be a crook and you don't know. But you do know that if they want to take advantage of you, you can. And stretching generally makes you feel good, and so it's an easy thing to apply. So that's going to burn some more bridges, but that's also the reality, is that the strength and fitness community is overrun with people over-prescribing mobility work and stretching and activation for people that simply need to work out more. Or work out harder, or work out more intelligently, or warm up more efficiently. 5 minutes of dynamic exercises can replace 30 minutes of stretching. And there is no way around that. That's just what can be done. And it's going to leave you more dynamic as an athlete as a result. So just because you're told you have a certain limitation doesn't mean you have to just become someone who has to stretch for hours every day. That's not the way the body has to work.
You did double down there. And I do trust my auto mechanic.
Double down.
Bjorn. Bjorn treats me right.
You need to.
Yeah, I do. First time I brought my car to Bjorn for a brake problem, fixed those babies up, came back, even spit shined that thing. Freaking gave it a car wash. I could see my reflection in it. No charge, just because he said he had an extra half an hour. What a guy. You want that kind of auto mechanic, that kind of body work guy on your side. So, all right, well, you doubled down. I was hoping to move on. And all I wanted to sort of wrap this conversation, I got to ask you about the speed goats, and then we're going to end this thing, is we're not giving you a lot of tangibles. Like, we're saying dynamics. We're just saying strength work, right? We're going to actually keep it that way. Maybe we'll do a separate episode on the specifics there. We're kind of giving you our philosophy on this. But what I do want is for each of us to outline, like, what do you think, like, a week should look like in the range of motion, mobility, dynamic? Like, what should it really look like? And I'll tell you what I do. And then if you want to tell me what you do or what your thoughts are on it. And I'm going to count this as range of motion stuff. If it were up to me, I'd hit a nice, let's just walk you through a typical 7-day schedule. Twice a week, it doesn't even matter the schedule. Twice a week, I am strength training, in which my lower body and upper body is going through full range of motion movements. One day of lower body work won't be under a lot of stress. One day it will be the focus and under a lot of stress. But I will be going through full range of motion strength work twice per week. Before quality sessions, sometimes after, mostly before, a good dedicated set of movements towards mobility, dynamics, to get my body primed for what's to come. And if you want to add anything on top of that, you know, you can call strides, striders, the weirdos call them, sprints, whatever you want. I think of Nick Riker when I hear the word striders. It's not all right. That is full range of motion. Opening yourself up into a sprint, let's call it, and then shutting it down is literally the range of motion at its largest of the run motion. And so having sprints or strides at the end of a recovery run or two each week, I think is a pretty good formula, especially if you're one of those who's like, I got to get up at 4:30. I have a 45-minute window to get my run in. Am I going to take 15 of those 45 to stretch, or am I going to run all 45? You're going to run all 45 and maybe finish with some pickups or strides at the end. So that would be my week. Couple days of strides, which is range of motion work for the run motion, because you're running at full stride. You're not going to be maintaining that stride. You're going to be using that stride at a lesser range of motion typically with everything else you do, including racing. And then your strength and your plyos. That would be my week in recommendation.
Perfect.
You have anything you want to add to that?
Mine's going to look very similar. 2 to 3 strength sessions per week. Compound movements, pushing and pulling with both upper and lower body, ensuring that you're taking it to your extreme range of motion under load. Perfect. That takes care of half the equation. Then, some amount of dynamic exercises. We can even post links to this on our social media or record our own video of what we like to do. But high knees, butt kicks, skipping, hopping, karaoke, things like that. Do that before every quality session in a mini version of that before every run. And then strides before quality sessions, lesser easy strides after easy runs. And you are as close to bulletproof as a runner will ever be. The only things you're going to have to address are in particular hips and ankles if you are a person who's tight there. Ankle range of motion unlocks speed. Hip range of motion unlocks health. And so you can work on those two areas with some stretching, with some band work, with some dynamic exercises. You've got the whole shebang rounded out just by doing those things.
I agree with you. Agree with all that. And I know this is a lot of theory and not a lot of specifics, but I think that's enough for this to this topic to dedicate to. If we want to get specifics, we can do a separate episode on specifics. And probably, truth be told, if we were to do that, have somebody even more knowledgeable than us maybe their specialty, right? Because we don't claim to be. This is through anecdotal evidence and some science, of course, but like through our own experiences and our how many athletes we've coached over the years, which is in the hundreds and hundreds at this point, right? So, all right. So if you are an expert on this and you want to crucify us, burn the house down, and would like your platform to speak on, reach out to the Running Public page. Maybe we'll have a follow-up episode if we get somebody that reaches out that we're interested in chatting with. We don't need to be right all the time. We've had episodes on here in which we've been told we're dead wrong by guests, and we've invited them on to say so. So we welcome that if that is the case. So tell me about your speed goats. Tell me why you don't like the speed goats.
I wanted to. I tried. But they have not fixed their compression of their foam problem. If anything, it's worse because they've made it more flexible, which means it's less dense foam. And when they use their compression molded EVA rather than anything super critical, it just squishes down over time and it loses any pop. These are the deadest speed goats I've ever run in. And I don't think it's close. I have, in fact, on me right now, Kirk.
Oh, yeah.
Speed Goat 4s. I put them on this morning because I came to the conclusion this weekend. And so today I put them on. And the moment I put my feet in them, I'm like, yep, the forefoot is more dense. And the whole thing feels like it has a bit more bounce to it. It's not a bouncy shoe, but it has more to it. And the added flexibility plus the compression, and it is a slightly thinner midsole foam in the forefoot. That combines to just squish down a little bit in the front. And it's unacceptable in a max cushion shoe that's no longer max cushion. And I find some forefoot discomfort. And it just doesn't have that bulletproof all-day cushion that the others used to have for me. The second piece is that the upper, they've made it more stretchy and pliable, but it also stretches out. And so step-in feel is great, and over time it loses some lockdown, and then there's more need to cinch it down and tighten, and it causes more midfoot pressure in places, and it's not a tank anymore where I feel like I can step on a rock and be fine. There is a little bit more of a chance to roll in this shoe, and that combined with the foam feeling like I get less life out of it now, I'm just out on this shoe. I have a brand new pair that I'll continue to wear, but it's no longer the shoe that I can throw on and say, it doesn't matter how long I'm going, I'm happy in this shoe.
Well,
and I really am sad to say that, but they haven't advanced it.
Well, I guess a follow-up question to that would be, was there a sweet spot in mileage in that shoe then? Like you got the Speed Goat 5 and right out of the gates.
Right out of the gates, it felt great on my foot, but it had lost that special tank feeling that where it was light, but like bulletproof. It felt deader to me than the others. So no, but then it compressed quickly. I think it lost its life quicker than the others.
I think
by 100 miles, I no longer like the shoe.
Well, I'm...
Third? I'm on my third one.
Oh, but you were okay with your
first one.
Which
is when I just decided, yep, it's official.
Oh.
No, I didn't like it, but I thought... Maybe I just need – I'd been in the Tekton X prior to this because my fours had run out of juice. So I thought maybe just – I'm not used to it. But as soon as I put these fours back on, I knew. I do think they could save it if they put – now, supposedly in the six, they're tightening the upper. But the midsole is still the same. But I think if they put the foam from the Tekton X in this, they could save the shoe. Not that it obviously needs saving for everyone. You love it. You've never loved a Speed Goat more. But for people like me – there's a lot of dissatisfaction, and I'm just finally going to admit it.
You're going against the grain there, and I respect that. The 4 is absolutely more of a tank, and it has a more dense feeling under the forefoot. You can run a ton of miles in them, and it still seems to give you something back. I agree with you. I think the sweet spot with the Speed Goat is actually once that foam compresses slightly and molds to my forefoot, it puts me right where I want to. There's a sweet spot. Then they go dead on you after, you know, too many miles. But I think the first 30 are clunky. I'm sure the back end when they're real worked up are clunky. But like the sweet spot in there, I think they can still rip once they compress just a hair. But that's me.
They can rip for sure. They can rip. But if I really want to rip, there are shoes I'd rather rip in. This was the shoe that I can run fast in, but I can go all day.
Got it.
It's no longer an all day shoe for me.
Well,
and I'm sad to say so.
Well, why don't you shoot me over your third pair if you don't have too many miles in them, and I'll take care of them for you. How's that sound?
You want that?
Are they a 10 and a half?
10 and a halves.
right in my sweet spot.
10 and a half with one run in them.
I might take those out. What color are they?
Teal with pink.
I think that shoe's all right. All right. Well, we'll talk offline. We will talk offline. We need to end this thing.
They still make some of the best colors. I'll give them that.
You're a big teal and pink guy, huh? I don't know if that says anything about you, but
that's not what I meant. Just that they have so many color options for their shoes. You can find what works for you, but I don't mind their teal and pink. Not at all.
All right. Let's stop. Let's stop recording. Do we have anything you want to wedge in here before we end? Maybe we ruffled some feathers. Maybe we confirmed some things other athletes are already thinking and feeling, but I think we did what we set out to do today, was to just like infringe our opinions, and they are opinions, some backed by facts about mobility work to you. Mm-hmm. And that has definitely been done.
It's been done.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys later this week. We have a fun interview for you on Friday, so hang tight.
I'm looking forward to it. See you, folks.
If anything resonated with you on today's episode and you're curious about taking your training to the next level, check out therunningpublic.com, where we have a training plan to fit your needs.